Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass. I'm your host, Sam, from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
And I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
Yes, you are. Each week we get together, we talk about cars, motorsport, F1, cars. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can watch us on youtube.com/behindtheglass. Don't forget to subscribe and turn on notifications. And Tony, if people want to support this podcast, what should they do?
Watch it.
No. But also head to Patreon. You can support us on patreon.com/behindtheglass. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. I'll be honest. Sometimes this podcast isn't as easy to record as it may seem. You know,
for me, definitely.
Well, I think, Tony, you come fairly prepared each week, ready to chat. You're a one-take machine.
Yeah.
I am overly analytical of our recordings. Mm. And a lot of the time, as we're talking, I'm judging the quality of the recording, the conversation, the clickbaitability. And I'll be honest, today's episode started and I wasn't happy. I wasn't enjoying what I was saying. I wasn't enjoying my thought process. I was distracted by a builder out the window. Tony's, I don't know what. So we've started again.
Hello.
I have no idea if Ben did a very clever edit of...
Please, Ben, please.
I'm sure he did.
But. Yeah, you have to get the bit where he...
Just my
ballsed
brain.
Up.
Then my brain just died. I was like, gone. It was just too much. I don't know where I'm all over the place today. I was supposed to be filming an update or sort of a review of the Defender, and I basically forgot a load of stuff that I was supposed to bring with me. I'm flapping.
Well, you do have a lot on your mind, and sometimes I think maybe you overthink things a bit.
Oh, I do.
You know, you just said, you're looking out the window at the builder, you're trying to think about what I'm going to say, you're worried about getting sued.
Whenever you open your mouth, you're worried about getting sued.
You're thinking about the title, you're thinking about what we're going to talk about, because you do often that you're the brainchild behind this and I just react. So I have got the easier job.
I don't know if that's necessarily true, but I appreciate you saying it, but... I think at the minute, to have a bit of a heart-to-heart with the audience, I do have quite a lot of my plate in terms of planning. Like, I'm a bit fed up of it now. So I always like the start of the year. We said this right at the beginning of 2022. I like the start of the year because it gives you a chance to kind of, you know, look at things with a fresh perspective and plan new projects and do things differently. And I've been doing that, but I feel like I've been doing it for too long. I'm so caught up in planning and things like, and it's end of February and I'm like, I just want to get doing stuff now.
Yeah,
I'm spinning a few too many plates, and as I say, that building's back again to distract me. I'm easily distracted today, so I apologize, people. There might be a bit of rambling in today's episode, but I'm determined now that we've started again to be more concise.
Well, next week I'm going to put a blind up, so stop.
Thank you.
No,
thank
because you. That's stop the right thing to do. Yeah,
it is. Just keep me focused. Yeah,
because how you get distracted by a builder the other side of the world, I don't really understand. But okay, I mean, it wouldn't distract me. But do you want to swap seats?
All right, so pro.
Can you manage the rest of this
I
episode?
I can manage. I'm going to stay focused.
Are you sure?
Yes, we're going to
shut
dive.
Your eyes. If
thank you
got.
So much. I should wear blinkers like a horse. We're going to dive into it. Well, I wanted to start off this episode by talking a little bit more about my new daily, the RS6, because last week we kind of left things on a bit of a cliffhanger, revealed the car in the last few seconds of the episode, and then faded to black. But now the main channel video's gone out. I've posted on Instagram. And whilst I don't want to drag out the My Next Daily series
any longer, because let's face it, it was long enough in the first place. A few points people made, or a few things that I thought I would discuss and let you share your thoughts and opinions on my car, because you didn't have a chance to do that last week. So I'll kick it off with a question. What do you think, Tony, of my new daily, the Audi RS6?
Well, I think it's the best car you've ever had, boy. It's just as simple as that. I cannot go in on you. I think it's absolutely perfect for what you want now. It's a perfect car in general. It literally ticks every box. If I'm going to be really, 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 really pinicky, there's a few little bits and pieces inside that I would change technology-wise. It's one real fundamental reason that if I had a choice between that and the M5, I would just about pick an M5. And I'm being so pinicky that I just think an M5 just drives down the road a little bit better. But if you want an estate car that does everything with some power, there is no better car. It's just as simple as that.
Yeah, the estate part is the part that won the RS6 for me, because I did look at Alpina B5 Touring.
Which would have been a disaster.
Well, it could have been very cool, but financing-wise, which is how I buy my cars, thank you, Magnitude Finance, it was 500 quid, 600 quid more per month for the Alpina, which just made no sense to me.
And would have been worth less by the end.
But I think that's a very good point. But the RS6, yes, whilst I have knocked it, and a lot of you did point out the fact, like, what the heck, Sam? Like, you've always said that this car's so boring. It's the obvious choice for people who have no imagination. And I did always feel that way. But when the newest version, the C8 version, launched, I was always kind of intrigued. I liked it a lot more than the last version. And I felt like that inherent sort of unnecessary hype around the car.
Because you didn't like the old car.
I didn't like the old car.
But why didn't you like the old car?
It's just big and heavy and cumbersome. And I didn't think it was that engaging to drive. I didn't think it looked that good. And it was kind of like, as I say, I think people just went, oh yeah, RS6 best car in the world. Well, with the new one, I've seen less of them out and about. I feel like there's less of that kind of immediate, I don't know, like, I just felt like it had a better...
There's probably less of them around. One, because of the pandemic as well. You know, they come out in 2020 or
2019.
The back end of 19, but early 2020, and that was pandemic time. So that will have that'll be a reason behind it for sure. And as well, they are a lot of money.
Oh my God. So don't have to tell me.
Yeah, they are right a few quid, and rightly so, because they're fairly unrivaled for an estate car. You know, there's really nothing like them. And the good thing about them as well, they don't blow loads of money. You know, they really hold their money in general.
Unless you put all the miles on like I'm going to do.
No, they're still, even when you look at the old shape, mate, I mean, Audi RS cars historically, they just hold their money. They just do, you know. So, but these have been a step up in price. But obviously what this new car is compared to the old one, there was a lot more of the old ones because they were doing deals on them.
Oh, okay.
They don't so much on this car. They probably won't at the moment, but you might get a couple of percent or 5% off or whatever. But in the old cars, they were doing 15% off. You know, when you think 2016 and when they were out to 15 and all that, cars were being absolutely binned out the door.
Okay.
So they were everywhere. They were everywhere. Yeah. So that and they were cheaper as well. So 20,000 quid cheaper probably. So
And because they were around for a while in terms of production years, you could pick up a used one at fairly good value, you know, sort of and it made what was always a very attractive car to a lot of people fairly affordable, so you saw them knocking around again and say on the market. So no, look, the old one wasn't for me. The new one's always intrigued me. There's still a lot that I need to figure out. It's a huge car. It is massive. I'd underestimated the size of the thing. I'd really underestimated how bad it is in fuel economy, but I was buying. I mean, it's a super estate. Like it's basically a sports car wrapped up in an estate body. I wasn't buying anything that was going to do amazing MPGs. I was aware, but maybe not prepared quite how bad it was.
Yeah, I mean, modern cars, mate, they are big now. They are just massively big. You know, I'm still driving the Range Rover. I know it's not really a comparison, but I was behind an an old Austin Mini the other day.
Oh my God.
And honestly, mate,
could have fit it in the passenger seat.
you could, honestly, the Mini was probably the width and size of the bonnet.
Yeah, outrageous.
Like,
outrageous.
I could almost drive over the car. That's how, I know you're talking about a big SUV to a Mini, but even the modern Mini is a big car now. When you look at the Countryman and the Clubman,
yep,
like that, they're
big.
Absolutely. So the Audi RS6 can't be the old one from 15 years ago. I mean, there's a lot of safety equipment in them now as well, which is why they're a lot heavier, and there's a lot of tech. And
it fits into the sort of global size of cars,
yeah.
But it just is big. But you know, I'm hoping and assuming and already finding out that all the positives, all the benefits outweigh those sort of side of things. So, you know, firstly, I've moved a little bit further outside of London, so I don't have to bother with width restrictions as often, and I've got a bit more space to manoeuvre around. And yeah, the size actually hasn't been an issue for me at all yet.
No.
And it's got 3D surround cameras for parking. Yeah, it's even got park assist. It's got all that. That doesn't really bother me. Fuel economy, fine, as I knew I was aware of. But for all the positives, as you can imagine, in terms of, well, the emotional thing, it's what we talked about when I dropped the X3 with you down at Gravelwood. And you said, does the new car pull on those heartstrings? Every time I walk up to it, I'm like, oh my God, this thing is so cool. When I'm driving, I've got that big V8 rumble, and it's a very nice place to be in that interior. So it's doing everything I wanted it and hoped it would do. The boot is massive. Twiggy seems very happy back there. Vicky hates it, the whole car. Refusing to drive it at this point.
Really?
Yeah, flat out refusing to driving it.
I was going to ask, actually.
Calls it the Chavmobile.
Yeah. Why?
Yeah, cause of the Chavmobile, so it's very Paul Wallace.
She's fuming. I mean, I'd be fuming if I was married to you, but what I'm saying is that, no, it's not a Chavmobile, mate.
And it will win her around, because what I am really pleasantly surprised by is how good it is at the comfy stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, it's a big hunking RS6. It's about power and performance as well, but I'm finding the ride very comfortable. I've seen a few people say, oh, it's still a bit too crashy in comfort mode, but I don't find that at all.
No, we're near as bad as the Merc, as the E-Class.
Yeah, the E-Class have been super solid. Yeah. So.
And it's weird, because that always used to be the most comfortable of the three.
Oh, but, that's interesting.
But arguably now, you'd say that the BMW is the most comfortable of the three, but I think the RS, for comfort, I think the RS6 probably just pips all three of them. I think, I'm just trying to go back in my head now, but the Merc is definitely the most uncomfortable, for sure.
Yeah, and you know, I've seen a few other people sort of saying, well, you know, because you're just basically pointing out, you know, M5, RS6, E63.
Well, they're the three competitors. Obviously, you can throw the Panamera in if you wanted, but
I would agree, slightly different, but my point was going to be SUVs, which is obviously where I started my hunt, and a lot of people saying, oh, well, you know, why, if, you know, Vicky's so upset, why not get an RS Q8, or why did you make this jump? But the estate thing is just, firstly, if I was going to be spending equivalent, 120 grand or whatever, on an SUV, for me, I inherently wanted something a bit more dynamic and sporty. That's a ton of money on an SUV. And once I decided that I was going to spend all this cash on my daily, and I felt like I wanted to reward myself, the car that I was driving the most should be the car that...
Did you consider an RSQ8?
No, I never considered an RSQ8, but I did look at a Bentayga. I did look at the V8 Defender. I did look at Range Rover Sport SVR.
Why didn't you consider an RSQ8? You like them?
I did-ish. I drove one last year. I didn't love it. I have to say, I didn't love it.
It doesn't drive like a Urus, does it? To surface what everyone thinks on social media. It's not as special, is it?
It's nowhere near as special. And it's sort of nice, but it definitely didn't pull on my heart.
It's just nice.
It's just nice. It's just nice.
Correct.
Whereas the RS6 is like, oh, RS6. Yeah. And judging by the reaction on Instagram and some of the amazing comments I've seen on YouTube, people get excited by the idea of that car. Well, the RSQ8, not so much. And as I say, once I got to that 100 grand bracket and I was starting to consider cars at that money, I was like, I think if I'm spending that much, I want something which I could take on a sports car rally or down to the Alps. And the RS6, you can do that. You can really trash it.
Yeah.
Or thrash it, sorry. Whereas an SUV is always going to be a little bit flawed once you start getting onto the real twisties. So.
Yeah, especially in that price bracket. Like I said, if you went up a notch, then you'd easily find an SUV that's as capable as an RS6 for sure.
But
in that price bracket,
100 to 120 grand,
there really isn't anything, mate. Yeah. There's nothing better than an RS6 for sure. I think you've picked a good car there.
Well, thank you very much.
For a change.
I surprised everyone by picking a car that everyone actually likes.
Yeah.
Because usually when I unveil my dailies, everyone's like, oh, what?
Yeah.
I think people were expecting me to come out with something really strange, which I was tempted to do. Yeah. There were some weird cars that I'd found, some stuff on collecting cars and Car and Classic and the back end of Auto Trader that I was like, that would be so tempting.
And actually, just to give you a bit of credit, and I have said this 5 minutes ago, but we've started again, by the way. but the reason why you probably didn't like the old car is because of your lifestyle. Because you know, we're going back 4 years or 5 years when, you know, you was in your mid-20s, you wasn't married, you lived in London, didn't have a dog. You know, you probably just thought that car's not for me. But now the new car is for you. It completely suits your lifestyle and suits what you want out of a car. And you're allowed to change your mind, mate.
Yeah, no, of course, course. And I think it's interesting that I have.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's super interesting that I have. So, no, I'm very,
very excited. Bit two-faced, but it is very... bit hypocritical.
Classic Sam. Says one thing on the main channel, says another thing on the podcast. We never know where he's at.
Yeah.
You watch this space, I'll be buying another McLaren 540C before you know it. But one car that did nearly change my mind at the last minute.
Oh, you didn't tell me this? Oh.
The new Ford Ranger Raptor. Did you see this?
I have. A V6 engine.
With a nearly 300 horsepower V6. Oh, it looks like the F-150. You had that blue old chip one. You loved it.
Yeah. And what I didn't like about it was it was a little bit underpowered, although it was loads better than the normal Ranger. And that's only 20 or 30 horsepower difference, but it had a 10-speed gearbox in it, which really helped. And obviously, it's got proper car suspension, so it does drive down the road nice, that car or truck, whatever it is. But that would appeal to me, mate. Yeah. One of them. Yeah.
I think that I've always loved the idea of an American truck, you know, like a truck. And I've talked about it before here on the podcast.
Looks nice.
It looks the bomb.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't have the need for one. and they don't really have a sort of, not a purpose, but an identity in the UK. You know, people don't use pickup trucks as leisure vehicles.
No.
You do get them used in the trade for towing and things like that. But people don't just cruise around in trucks like they do in America. Hello to our US viewers, by the way, or listeners. But I do like the idea of it.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm going to message Ford and I'm going to ask to take one somewhere cool, like Iceland or something.
50,000 quid or more that truck will be. Mm. And it's not commercial because it's got car suspension, you see. Like you see all these Amaroks, the Volkswagen Amaroks and the Ford Rangers and all these other Hiluxes and stuff, and the builders love them, even if they use them as personal cars, because they can use them as personal stroke commercial vehicles and use them as a company car and have the VAT back on them and stuff. Whereas this Ranger, you can't do that. And another thing with the Ranger, because it's got normal suspension on it, you can't load it up, so it won't take as much weight as a normal conventional pickup truck. So
it's a bit of a show pony.
It's this exactly what it is. I mean, I really liked driving that Ranger about cool. the it was just cool, yeah. And you stood, even like when I said, like, I'm driving a Range Rover now, and even when you pulled up to a Range Rover, it looks small. Do you know what I mean?
It's a bit like Defender, because when you're in Defender, you're big and up high and the thing's brutish and you've got to run and jump in it. But fundamentally, it actually falls down at the sort of purpose that it's supposed to serve. So did you watch Harry's video yet? Harry's Garage about the commercial?
No.
You know, I was so pleased that he said some of the things he said, because, you know, he's a farmer using commercial one like he should.
Yeah.
And a lot of the foibles that I have with the Defender, he agreed with. You know, you can't fit things in the door correctly. Stuff doesn't lie down flat. Things are too heavy. Like, just all the stuff which I think is flawed about Defender, he agreed with. And he's using it as you really should use a Defender. So actually, alongside that, suddenly made me think that some initial videos and tests came out of Grenadier. So Henry Catchpole, Carfection, Matt Watson. By the way, my Audi RS6 is not Matt Watson's ex-RS6. He had an Audi press loan for Did 6 he? Months, which was Viper Green. Do you know your Audi greens very well?
Well, I know there's a Leary green and there's a darker green that you got.
There's five different greens.
Okay, fine.
And he had a green with tan car, which wasn't my car. It was an Audi press car. When I revealed mine, everyone was like, oh, is this Matt Watson's car? I was like, no. Anyway, so a few people went out and drove that Grenadier thing on some mud ruts, and it just looked, oh, it looked so excitingly cool.
It looked what it should look.
Yeah.
It should be in the right, it's in that right place.
In the right place, yeah. So I can't even remember what I was thinking about. But yeah, Defender, I think, similar issues to maybe Ranger Raptor, where looks the part, is cool as a lifestyle accessory, great. But actually, if you want to properly use something, you can go out and get something.
Discovery, Dunbar Discovery, just because that is the best Land Rover. It's just as simple as that. It does everything that a Defender does and more. It's cheaper, and it's loads more practical. So just go and buy Discovery.
There you go. Now, I do want to touch on the new Morgan three-wheeler, but we're going to do it probably next week or in the future because I need more information about it and I'm going to get more information. So
No,
but you will. We're going to get into it. Just saying that we haven't forgot it because I'm about to say something, which is there's not much other car news to discuss. And before I said that, I don't want to go, what about the new Morgan? So just getting that out of the way. Before we jump into a Q&A, which is what today's basically all about, huge thanks to our patrons. Obviously, always huge thanks to our patrons. But also a whole lot of people on Instagram for submitting some questions, which we're going to go through in a second. Before we dive into that, thought we could quickly talk about the F1. I mean, we're not supposed to call it testing, we're supposed to call it a shakedown, but it was testing. The first time we've seen cars on track for 2022. And obviously, don't worry, after the checkered flag, my F1 special series with Paul Wallace is making a return in 2022, but Boroff, he's not here today, so let's you and I talk about it. What were your initial impressions of firstly seeing the cars, what the cars look like, the storylines from testing?
Yeah, fairly hard to predict at this stage, as in we don't really know a great deal. Very interesting how they all seem to have different aero and different setups. You can read absolutely nothing into the times in terms of lap times and stuff. It means nothing. You know, half the time they're probably just cruising around. I don't really have a great deal to say. Interested in some of the drivers' comments in terms of how they feel that, you know, the season's going to pan out, and some of the massy fallout as well. And
there seems to be sort of two separate camps, don't
there? Like, does
pro Red Bull Verstappen, pro Hamilton Mercedes?
Absolutely, yeah. It does seem that the grid is split. It'd be very interesting this year for sure. So,
and what do you think of the way the cars look fundamentally?
Yeah, I mean, to me, like, an F1 car is an F1 car. I mean, can you really change an F1 car that much? I mean, they have changed it, obviously. I can see that the wings and the wheels and the aero is loads different. Engines the same?
Yep.
Same engines, yeah. So, same powers, same torque levels? And
I think they've changed some of the MGUs.
Okay.
To put more of a reliance on MGUK. Someone help me out here. I need a F1 tech nerd. But fundamentally, the powertrains,
they're similar. Yeah, okay, fine.
If not nearly identical.
Yeah, nearly identical.
It's so, all a move towards aero. This is all a move towards ground effect aero, less aero on the front with the wings, different profiles around the air moving around the car. Obviously, the big thing is the bigger wheels. Change of tyres.
And they've obviously put covers over the wheels. Why have they done that? Is that literally for aero, for another following? Aero,
yeah, it's another. The aim was to improve racing. So they're trying to get rid of the wash behind the car, the sort of wake that cars would create, making it hard to follow. Because obviously if you're an F1 car, you need clean air giving you maximum downforce. If you get into dirty air, which is where the air is moving around because you're following a car in front of you, you don't get the same effect, so that it's harder to keep up the same speed.
Which is normally within a second, roughly.
Second and a half. Yeah
that sort like of that. Thing, which is why you always see sometimes the faster car, especially last year, we could see it loads of times with Lewis and Max, where they would get within a second and a second and a half, and they can't make the time up unless they've got new tyres or unless their car's much faster, because you need to be, is it three seconds a lap faster to overtake?
I think it would depend on so many factors. Okay. But yes, you have to have a significant, I don't think it's as much as 3 seconds, but I think you'd have to have a significant advantage.
Correct.
Over the person in front to be able to, basically break through that dirty.
That's
air.
Right, yeah.
And usually that was coming down to a tyre advantage. But,
yeah.
But no, I mean, I'm sort of with you. You know, firstly, let me just come out and say that, I'm definitely, there'll be people much more clued up on firstly the sport, but also the tech and the new rules for 2022. So forgive us or me if there was anything that we said there which was slightly wrong, and feel free to comment below if you have a better understanding of the rules for 2022. But I think the cars look great. Firstly, I think the liveries are out of this world this year. I'm going to applaud all the teams for fantastic liveries.
Well, they've really, really like honed in on the livery. They've really made a fuss, haven't they, this year as well? More so Fine. Than normally.
Yeah, because usually they're a refresh of the year before.
Just go, there you go, there's the livery.
So really happy about that. But on track, I'm sort of with you that apart from the increase in the front wing height, the cars don't fundamentally look that different.
Mm.
I think what will be interesting is if you saw a 22 car and a 21 car on track at the same time, how different they may look. Or in 6 months' time, if we see footage from previous years. But actually, I don't think the cars look as revolutionary different yet. Maybe we'll. Let's wait and see until we see them all on track and racing and things like that. But hey, look, I'm excited and intrigued. Whenever you get such a huge rule change like this, it creates the opportunity for unpredictable race results. And I think the first 3 to 5 races will be fairly unpredictable as people figure it out. Reliability seems to be absolutely immense, which is good for racing. But I think as the development war continues this year, which is what we're going to see, you might have one team start the year incredibly strong and then fall back or the teams catch up. So yeah, lots to look forward to. But fundamentally, the car's liveries are amazing. What's your favourite?
Ferrari.
Yeah, Ferrari.
Ferrari's my favourite.
Oh, I'm still all the... Charles Leclerc, 2022. It's happening.
I really do want, and I honestly think that Ferrari will be there or thereabouts. We spoke about this off camera. I'm not sure they're going to have enough to win, but I genuinely think they've probably got a chance.
I think powertrain wise, they are right there.
Yeah, for sure. And remember that this is what they've geared up to be as well. So you'd like to think they're going to. Listen,
they should at least get some victories. At least. If not, I'm giving up.
In recent years, they're 200 points off the... I mean, that's a joke, mate. You know what I mean? So, you know, they really got to close the gap. It's a really big gap to close. Who do I want to win? Obviously, I want Lewis to win the championship. I'd be really, really interested to see how Russell gets on.
Mm-hmm.
Because we spoke about this a little bit off camera as well, apart from Rosberg and Button, no one in general ever beats Lewis.
And everyone who's going to come out and say, what about Alonso? They drew on points.
Yeah, and it was his first or second season.
It was his first season. He was a rookie and he drew on points with the current 2-time world champion. So just before you all jump in, say, hold on a second.
I'm glad you said that because I knew, but you loads better at statistics than me.
We've spoken about this before and someone's gone, well, actually, Alonso. I'm like, Rosberg and Button beat
Calm down, Alonso fans. Yeah. I mean, he's good, but he's not that good.
He's old. How old?
You know, he's 40.
We're going to eat our words when he wins everything this year. But at the launch of the new Alpine, he's standing there next to Oscar Piastri, F2 champ, looking like a, you know, baby-faced whatever, and Ocon. I looked at Alonso and I was like, mate, you need a wheelchair.
Yeah.
He looked so old.
But he does look old, but... Okay, I'm going to ask you this. He's 3 years older than Lewis.
Yep.
Lewis is 37, he's 40.
Yeah.
If you give Alonso the car, does he win a championship?
He wins a championship. Does he win a championship over Hamilton, Verstappen, Leclerc, Russell, Norris? No. I think if Alonso had been in the Mercedes for the last 6 years, would he have won all those championships? Yes. Alonso is undoubtedly one of the greatest drivers.
Let me ask you another question. If he's in Russell's seat this year, does he win the championship?
So I'm just going to say, purely based on the fact that in Hamilton's rookie year, despite what Alonso said on the F1 podcast, whenever he did that last year, 2007, Alonso had to be in or around his peak. He had just won 2 world championships against Michael Schumacher.
In his 20s.
In 2006, going head to head with Schumacher. Mm. He had to be in or around his peak. And so he spoke about saying he had a bit of an off year. There was a lot of doesn't matter. As a driver, he had to be near his peak. And Hamilton as a rookie matched him and very nearly beat him. A few strategic errors and maybe the pressure got to Hamilton a bit. So if that was then, you've got to think now with the experiences that they've both had, I would put Hamilton to beat Alonso over a championship. I do think Alonso is one of the greatest drivers Formula One's ever seen that hasn't got the championships or the results that maybe reflect his talent. But there's a reason for that.
Mm.
And because of the last 10 years, he hasn't been there fighting for championships.
Yeah.
And Hamilton proved last year what experience at fighting for championships can do for you. Okay, fine, he ended up losing, but he was able to apply himself, maybe a little bit too late in the day, which Paul and I said at our season review. But he, you know, Alonso has been not in that position for so long, I would just put my money on Hamilton. But against a younger foe, let's say it's Alpine versus Ferrari, could Alonso sneak a championship over Leclerc and Sainz? Yeah, I think he could. And what a story it would be.
Yeah.
But I just don't like the guy. Because okay. He was Schumacher's foe. I can't get over that.
Yeah, yeah. No, I don't. I can take him or leave him as well. Yeah. So I'm going to ask you one more question, because I know you probably want to go to Q&A, but I'm going to ask you one more question. Who wins the championship this year? It's very hard to predict.
I think it's too hard to predict.
It's probably a bit early, but
okay,
we haven't even spoke about Verstappen, by the way. He's a world champion. We haven't spoke about it. So that's, I mean, we're being a bit...
Why do we need to speak about
him? No. It's not so that we don't need to speak about him. I mean, he's the world champion.
He had a very quiet test. As did Hamilton. We haven't spoken about Hamilton. We're just speaking about Alonso.
Yeah, I suppose. But he is world champion. We perhaps
calm down, don't
but give big him up a little bit. I mean, he's world champion, mate.
He's defending world champion.
Is he going to win it this year?
Defending. I genuinely think it's not possible to say. It is too early. I think from reading at it, we've got potential for Mercedes, Red Bull and Ferrari to be the three leading or most competitive teams for the first handful of races. So Ferrari, Mercedes and Red Bull. I think McLaren and Alpine are then there or thereabouts. So I think we could be in for a mega first five races of the year. I think Ferrari's supposed advantage after this shakedown will be very quickly worn away. And I don't think Mercedes or I think definitely not Red Bull showed their hand in that shakedown.
No.
So, hey, if the car is there, Verstappen is champion.
Yeah. Well,
we know this. Unfortunately, this is the truth of Formula One. The driver is only a part of the winning success.
Yeah.
So if the car has an obvious advantage, Verstappen's champion. I think
but you need both.
Verstappen's champion over Perez for sure.
Yeah.
So if there's an evil playing field, which we get a Mercedes versus Red Bull situation. Yeah, it's too early to say. I will, with Paul, I will make my prediction at the end of the proper preseason test.
Nearer the time.
Yeah, end of Bahrain test. We're going to make our preseason predictions, but let's wait and see. Who knows? How exciting. How exciting that we have no idea.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah. So yes, as you said, let's move on to our Q&A, because that was theoretically the point of today's episode, because there's just not a lot been happening recently. Actually, you know what? What we should touch upon, and we're not going to touch upon it too much because we try not to make this a political podcast.
Oh, I knew this was coming.
No, but I think I'm just going to say one thing. I'm not sure if you say anything at all. Of course, we are aware of the war taking place in Ukraine at the moment. And we're not ignoring it. Of course, there's people who say it seems a bit insensitive just to be carrying on with car chat and car news and talking about buying sports and supercars and things like that. I get it. I totally get it. But the fundamentals are that this is a hopefully an entertaining podcast to give you light relief from whatever troubles are going on in the world or in your world. And of course, I will say my thoughts are 100% with anyone affected by the war. By the war. And so that's all I'm going to say. But I didn't want you to think that we're just here completely ignoring the fact that it's taking place.
Yeah.
It's obviously a major thing for the world to be going through. So yeah, but fingers crossed, we're light relief. That's the aim of this podcast. We don't want to talk about things that maybe we don't always fully
understand. Yeah.
Actually, talk about things we don't understand. We do that every week. Yeah. That's literally what our podcast is.
We've done it for 35 minutes so far.
So just want to touch on that. So yeah, let's move into the Q&A. So got a whole range of questions here. Start off with Tom Smith. Going off the back of what we've just been talking about with the RS6, actually, he's saying Merc E53 AMG, RS4 or M34i, all estates, all around a similar price used and in the same competitive bracket, which would you choose to live with daily? Can I just say very quickly, we obviously do have the M3 Touring coming, but that will be a price above the RS4 and the E53 on the used
market. Well, the E53, I don't think competes.
Oh, it should be the C, shouldn't it?
Should be the C
43.
Yeah, the E53 competes with an S6 or a BMW 550 or something like that, you know? So I would have an RS4 over them three that I, you know, what was the BMW equivalent?
M340i. I'd have the 340i Touring.
I'd have the RS4.
Fair enough. But yeah, interesting. Mo Bella, what age did you get your license?
Me or you?
You.
What, 17?
We'd straight away, right?
Yeah, first time.
First time straight through?
Three minor faults. Bish, bash, bosh. Well, I've got a bus, bus license, by the way. So
we know.
Got one minor fault.
On the bus?
On that one minor fault.
What, do you remember what your three faults were on your main driving license?
No. I mean, mate, it was 20 odd years ago.
I got wheel spin, going up a hill, did a little burnout. I did pulling out too soon at a roundabout. And splashing an old lady with a puddle, which I didn't know was a minor.
Really?
I got three minors as well. And those are my three minors.
Yeah, I don't remember what they
were. Did you get to 17 years old? Because what's the age now for a license?
Same.
Did you get to 17, then go through your learning process and then take your test? Or did you sort of already cheekily know how to drive and just...
No, I was driving. Mate, I used to drive to school at 15.
I don't know if you're supposed to say that on the thing that we're publishing.
Well, it don't matter now.
I guess it's
a bit
not.
Late now.
Sure.
But yeah, I used to hire the car around the corner for my mum.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, okay, true story.
So you literally just went into it. So I was the same. So I
had like four lessons.
Yeah, I used to drive my mum's car around the countryside. Yeah. So in the
garden.
Amongst the estate.
In the fields.
Yes, Alfred, I'm going to be doing a few laps around the 60 acres today.
60, is that all?
Well, that was the garden.
Oh, okay, fine.
If you want to talk about the lands.
Oh, okay,
6,000. So yeah, I was the same as you. I think I took my test 2 weeks after turning 17 or something like that.
Yeah.
No lessons, straight in, and then the three minor faults.
And obviously when I was 16.
We sound like we're showing off now. We sound like we're bragging, don't we? Yeah, no lessons, straight in, mate.
Yeah, when I was 16 as well, I was working in the...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Bus garage. So I was driving buses at 16 on private land. So I knew how to drive. Essentially.
And he was drinking beer at 9 years old. I don't know. Sounds like we're going down that route.
10.
Jim Obs. Jim. What?
Jim. Oh, Jim.
Osbaldiston.
Oh, well done.
I guess.
Just Jim.
Hi, Sam. If you and Tony had 100K each and had to buy one car which you could not sell and had to drive as your only car for the rest of your life, what would it be?
911.
If you don't use the whole budget, you'll lose it. You have to pay, run, and insure and maintain it each year. Well, okay, hold on a sec, because you've made it a little too complicated there at the end, Jim. I heard you say 911, so immediately my head was like, what's the most affordable turbo I could buy?
911.
Could you get a 911.2 turbo for 100K a bit too much?
I think a bit more than that. Because of the astronomical money of the 992. I'd just buy a 911 Carrera S.
Just buy a 992 Carrera S, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'd
buy.
One
car for the rest of your life.
Yeah, perfect.
I think you'd be all right.
2 year servicing, don't go wrong.
Sounds like it's an obvious answer for the Behind the Glass podcast, but
yeah.
I don't think you could do much better than that, could you?
No, you can't.
Yeah, sorry, Jim. Thought we were going to debate that a bit longer, but we both have the exact same. You said it as I was thinking it. So, Kezti. Neil, I don't know how to pronounce. I know Neil. Anyway.
What's his name?
Kezti.
What's his first name?
Neil.
Oh, Oh, Neil.
Where do you both see yourself and your businesses in 5 years?
Oh, I'll be on a yacht.
On a yacht.
With Philip Green.
No, I don't think... No. He's not a popular character these days.
Well, I don't care if he's popular. He's got a nice boat in Monaco.
I'm not sure he does. I think he's about to go to jail, isn't he?
No,
the boat's about to be taken away from him.
No, it's not.
Tax evasion and fraud.
No, he's not.
I think he is.
No, he's done, mate. He's sitting on a boat with his feet up, enjoying himself.
Well,
I don't think he's going to go to prison.
I'm going to choose better company. I've been on a boat with Kendall Jenner. Sorry, and Vicky, my wife. Cut that bit out, Ben.
5 years is too soon for you for a boat, mate. You've got
no,
bit
no,
more,
no. I don't want to be on a boat. That was your dream. So you genuinely, as in retired. Let's be serious for a second. Let's be serious for a second. 5 years. Come on. So for your business, where would you like Gravelwood to be in 5 years' time? What would you like, if anything, to be different?
Well, if I could change anything, I don't really want to grow the business anymore. Because I have other interests as well, and I plan to continue with other interests. Gravelwood is my main business, but I do have other interests. If I could change anything about the business, we would like to buy somewhere for sure.
A facility.
Yeah. Yeah. So we lease our unit at the moment, and we'd like to buy somewhere. And I have been trying to find somewhere, and I have looked for quite a long time, not really focused my whole world on looking, but I have looked for quite a long time, and I've never found anywhere that really suits. But yeah, I'd like to be in somewhere that we own.
So if you're a commercial real estate and you think you've got a property just right for Gravelwood Car Sales, get in touch. At Tony Gravelwood Car Sales on Instagram.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
Kent, Surrey area, please. Thank you.
So you would potentially like to rehome Gravelwood.
Yeah.
You're wanting to expand on or grow other interests that you have, other business opportunities?
Yeah, I'd like to have some more property.
To take you away from Gravelwood alongside?
No. I've still got another 30 years of work, mate. But I'm thinking a bit more long-term when I finish. I haven't really thought about that before, but I know I've still got most of my adult life, still working life, but I'm thinking like when I get to retirement. So, I'd probably like to build a bit more of a property profile, a few more properties. Yeah. I'm not sure in what form. I've got a couple already, but I'd like to build on that if I could.
I think that's a good, I mean, so basically you do still have quite significant goals.
Of course.
Which I think is obviously important. That's
and they change.
Ever changing. Do you ever have goals that you've set yourself that you're working towards and then you just go, it was a load of crap?
Never.
So once you've set a goal and you're on your way to it, you'll never change your course?
No.
And even if you think, it's not worth it anymore.
Because a goal's always worth chasing. But there's no point in having a goal otherwise.
What if the goal was to become the leading diesel dealership in the UK?
But I wouldn't have such a stupid goal.
No. But there will be times in your life where you will go down a path because of your own beliefs or because of global situations, which with time... Another opportunity may steer you away from it, or you may realize it's not still the best way to push the business. There will be things that change your course in life.
Yeah. You got a point. I mean, most goals that I've had up to now have all been money motivated, obviously, because that's how I think you should always grow a business. It should always be, unfortunately, it is what it's about, whether we like it or not. The world revolves around money, and sometimes it's a horrible way to think about it. But I don't really have money goals anymore. I set myself other goals.
Okay.
So...
life goals, basically.
Yeah.
And then they are harder to be pulled away from because once you've set them there.
Yeah, because they're foundations at that point. You know, I'm just trying to find my way towards the end of my working life, but I'm just doing it now. Why I'm still grafting and earning money, I might as well think about it now. And when I get to that point, then I've already done it. There's no point thinking about that when you're 65 and you're going to retire at 70. It's not enough time. So you know, goals are all about planning as well, and you should always plan. And if you have a goal or you have an ambition, I always find you should always try and stick to it. If you believe in that, you should always try and stick to it. People that jump between paths and goals, they never... You should always stick at something. Find something you're good at and stick at it. As long as you're good at it and you know you can earn some money, stick at it.
I agree. All I will caveat that with is that don't be scared to change your path. That's
no,
what I'm saying.
No.
I know a lot of younger listeners or people who email me or whatever, and they feel like the decision they're making at 23, 24 in terms of a career choice is that's it for life. I've got to work out what I want to do and put everything into it. I'm like, hey, I had three or four different careers before I became a YouTuber.
For sure.
And I didn't predict at any point ever that I was going to become a YouTuber. So all I'm saying is that you can work really hard at something or work in a real, but also don't be afraid that at some point you can't change your mind or find a new direction or a new path. You're not a failure necessarily, as long as you're choosing a new, you're not giving up, you're choosing a new goal or new perspective for the right reasons.
Yeah, and that can also depend on whether you work for yourself and if you work for someone as well. So that would apply a lot more if you have a career in something and then you don't like that and you want to change your career, then you're changing your path. But if you have a business and you believe in your business and you believe you can make a success of it, you should stick with it.
For sure. Don't give up at the first hurdle.
Don't give up.
Yeah, definitely don't give up was my point. But also don't be afraid of recognizing, like, you know, like old Simon Cowell in the X Factor, you know, if you're shit singing, just don't sing. You can also accept that, you know, maybe sometimes you have to find a new path or a new goal. But don't just give up because you're feeling lazy.
Yeah.
I think for me, 5 years' time, an evolution of what I'm doing now, I'm really super happy with the way that I'm running the channel and the business at the moment. I would like in 5 years, Behind the Glass to be the biggest podcast in the UK.
Yeah. That's a goal of mine.
Yeah. I'd love to push this to expand over and above just the car audience, you know, to really cement Behind the Glass as one of the leading podcasts in the UK.
It's a real community.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which, you know, fundamentally, that's why we love this, I think, is the community we're building. So that's for sure a goal. The channel, as I say, like, what I'm loving is that this year I'm creating content I want to create. I don't feel any pressure to create content that I feel like I need to create. So every video I've been super proud of, I've had the time to create, I want to create. So, you know, honing in on that and, yeah, various goals that are attributed with that and some cool opportunities that are bubbling along.
Yeah.
Outside of that. DV24, any recommendations for finding good driving routes for a Euro road trip? We have touched on this before. I mean, just go. just go. I mean, firstly, there's a load of websites out there telling you great roads to check out. Anywhere within the kind of French, Italian, Swiss Alps.
Just go to the Alps.
Just go to the Alps.
Just go to the Alps.
Northern Spain, stunning. Portugal, stunning. I mean, you can find so...
I'm going to Europe this year.
Oh, yeah, lovely.
Yeah, Spain and Portugal. Yeah. That's what I'm doing.
Oh, just, you can find some unbelievable... The 296 GTB drive was down near Seville. And the road we went on, oh my God, it was one of the most amazing driving
roads.
And I
bet there was no one on it.
No one on it. Yeah. And I said to the front, I was like, how did you find this? We did 2 months of recces.
Yeah.
We knew we wanted to be this part of Europe and we just did 2 months just driving and driving. We found the road and we were like, perfect.
Yeah.
Legend. So you can find them. They're all out there. I can't give you too many more tips than that, I'm afraid.
But if you want to be lazy, just go to the Alps.
Yeah.
Exactly. Just as simple as that.
Straight away. Carrera Cam, if you had to trade your 360 for a car of the same value, what would it be? Tony will tell you the value is about 25K. I'm going to pretend it's around 85.
He's optimistic.
You know what? So I did, I went on another podcast recently. Oh, look at me.
How dare you? Traitor. Without me?
Yeah. The Driven Chat podcast.
Well, that wouldn't have been as good.
Sure the audience would agree. The Driven Chat podcast, very interesting. And I reminded myself of something which I'd probably forgotten, which was really a lot of my love or passion for Ferrari road cars started with a film that Nicolas Cage was in called The Family Man, where he drove it was a 550 Maranello. In my head, I always thought it was a 575. And I've been looking at 575s a lot recently, just from a lust point of view, not that I'm really ever going to go and buy one, but if I had to get rid of the 360, I'd swap it for another Ferrari of the similar era, and it would be a 575.
Can you imagine, actually, just going on the podcast, can you imagine if another podcast we would just overtake their podcast?
Because as a combo?
Oh,
disaster.
We would just literally go into professional mode, and they'd be out of it.
We'd just be talking about it. I quite like it, though. If you've got a podcast out there and you want something like to join or come on as a guest, invite us. We're actually quite keen.
It'd be quite funny, yeah.
Kev's Kells, should I put a high or low deposit in a PCP deal? I'm going to lean towards you on that, Tony.
It don't matter. It doesn't make no odds, because if you're the wrong way, you still got to pay when you get out anyway.
So. I think they recommend around 10%, right?
Yeah.
Theoretically.
But ultimately, it doesn't matter, because you're still responsible at the end, yeah, regardless.
But hold on a sec, because, you know... What you're doing is you're deciding about your monthly. Do you want to put 20 grand into a deal with the risk of only getting 10 grand back, just so that you pay a few hundred quid less per month? Or do you want to put 10 grand in, pay a few hundred quid more per month, and maybe get 9 back or 10 back?
Or nothing. So what he's trying to say is that, do I put a grand deposit in and pay more money, or just keep the payments low? And I mean, a PCP is a bit different because it's guaranteed, so it will always lean towards the bank. And it always all depends how much you need your money as well, as in your actual cash.
Flow, yeah.
If you don't need the cash, always put more in, because over the term of the loan, it's always cheaper because you're borrowing less money. So if you've actually got the money to spend, then put it in. If it's completely spare and you're never going to use it, it's just going to sit in the bank getting 0.2 of an interest, then you're better off putting it into the car, with the hope of maybe getting a bit more back when you sell it. I think that was what you were trying to say.
I think that my best advice I ever got from Magnitude Finance was, think about the point you're selling, not the point you're buying. When you're buying a car and financing, a lot of people over fuss about the monthlies and the deposits and this is the big thing. But the pain can come at the end, and it can really bite, because the last thing you want to do is, when you're selling a car, find out that you owe a lot of money.
Not on a PCP though. So on a PCP, because it's guaranteed. But a lot of these cars over 60 odd thousand quid, definitely over 60 odd thousand quid, they're balloon payments, but they're not guaranteed. So it's okay, called HP balloon.
Sorry, okay, yeah.
So,
yeah, good point.
So then at that point, you're going to pay either end. If you're buying a 20K Golf, it's a guaranteed value at the end. You're either putting less deposit and pay more monthly payments, or put more deposit and pay less monthly payments, essentially.
Okay, sure.
But when you get over a certain value, the balloon payment isn't guaranteed, to which point, if you put less deposit, you're going to pay at the end anyway.
You make a good point.
Thank you.
James Scholl. If you could both have a job in another industry, what would it be?
Well, I've had other jobs in other industries. Do you know what? I've visited this quite often. I'd have a McDonald's. Me?
Well, yeah, you've said this to me before, actually.
Yeah. And I've often visited the possibility of owning a franchise McDonald's. It's a few quid, but the biggest problem I've had is the time. You know, I'd literally have to come away from my business. So if someone put a gun to my head and said,
"You can't work in cars anymore,"
I'd probably go McDonald's.
You'd still have ended up friends with Paul Wallace, because he would have been your number one customer.
My best customer, yeah.
Yeah, you've spoken about this before, and I think we both know a guy who owns a load of Domino's dealerships in Swindon. He's made a fair few quid. My God, he's living his best life.
Yeah, I mean, Domino's is a really good example, but McDonald's, I mean, it's not a lot cheaper, but it is cheaper franchise Domino's. But, I mean, McDonald's, they just rang the bell, you know? Who really in this country, I mean, there will be some people, but there's not many, has never had a McDonald's.
I haven't had a McDonald's probably since 2014, 15.
But you've had a McDonald's before.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Sure, like, fair point.
Like,
fair
everyone's point. Had a McDonald's at some point, and the reach, I mean...
Oh, and brand value, I mean...
Mate, it's incredible, the van.
Everyone around the world knows what McDonald's is.
Everyone knows what McDonald's is, yeah.
Interesting. I've been in the film industry, I think. I'm not sure entirely what role.
Not
I
F1?
Playing. No, because I'm assuming that falls into cars, no?
Well,
I'm kind of very, very, very vaguely involved with F1 now. I do a podcast about it. Oh, yeah, if I was allowed F1, but I was thinking away from anything cars or motor related, it'd be film.
You wouldn't do my job?
No, that's cars related, mate.
Oh, yeah. different.
You're not with it today, are you?
Different type, though. I mean, you're right.
I'm assuming he means the automotive industry.
Okay, come out of that completely.
So if I have no passion with cars, I'm not doing anything with cars, it would be film. Because that's my other big passion.
Be an actor or?
No, I don't really know what I'd do, but I'm obsessed with film. I'm obsessed with every element of film.
Not music. Cinema, you like music?
I did like music.
Ah.
I went through that period of my life and I got burnt by working in a few jobs that ruined the industry. You know, often it says, don't work in something you're passionate about or hobby. Like, don't work with your hobby or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And music was that for me. I love music.
Don't meet your hero.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. I saw the dark side of the music industry where every part of film I've ever been involved with, I've been more fascinated, more intrigued, more excited rather than
every industry's got a dark side though, mate. Every industry's got a problem.
Welcome to YouTube.
Yeah.
But there was too much ugliness in music for me as a fan to still have a love for it.
Yeah.
I ended up walking away feeling very bitter about it. Whereas 5 or 6 years working in and around film, every element I got involved with, I loved and was intrigued by and excited by. So that's why I think that's what I would have, you know, ended up doing. And then final question, which we may pick up on another week's episode, because I think it's an interesting one, is from Ben Gisborne. What are the dangers of buying a modern classic? How to try and avoid huge repair bills, etc. Love an M3 F92 with the V8, but scared of getting a dud. And this is something, Tony, which you suggested we should do as a topic at some point, which I say we may revisit, which is kind of like cars that look or seem like great value that are sort of attractive ideas, you know, DB9s or early Bentley Continental GTs or early V8 Vantages, which someone like me is like, oh yes, modern classic gold.
Yeah.
Someone like you goes, why would you be spending 35 grand on that piece of crap from 12 years ago when you could get a brand new Golf GTI?
Yeah, the old V10 M5 is another one.
Exactly.
I mean, that is a...
But so cool. It's a V10 M5.
Yeah.
So all I would say is someone who spends a lot of time in and around modern classics and has owned a couple, currently owns the 360, it's all about budgeting and experience. The biggest thing, and I try to tell Paul this a million times over with his LP640, you've got to buy the best example you can afford. It's not necessarily about spec. I was lucky where I found a 360 that was dream spec and had the dream history. Now, it's harder to do with cars that have been cheap for a long time because people don't tend to care about them or give them the proper servicing. Porsche 996s are a perfect example of this. Because they've been overlooked for so long, very few owners have put them through Porsche centres or given them their yearly service. And anything that's kind of sports or prestige does need that yearly service, does need to be attended to.
They weren't very good from the start, the 996.
Well, I would disagree, but...
Still got your one.
This is not the conversation we're having. Buy the best example you can find, the best well looked after. You can always do things about spec. There's peelable paints, there's incredible interior trim shops, there's historic wheel companies, etc. So don't fuss too much about going, but I really want a yellow one, if that yellow one has more mileage and less service history than anything else. So buy the best you can and budget and be prepared. Be aware that unlike a modern car, there isn't an alarm for everything that can go wrong. You know, there are things that go wrong on cars from, you know, early noughties that it doesn't tell you about. They're just going wrong.
Mm.
And so you've got to be sort of almost proactive that when you go into your specialist, your independent, your local dealer, get them to give you a full breakdown of a report, see things that are starting to wear thin, and don't always assume they're just literally trying to rip off all your money. If you can afford to do certain work, it's better to be preemptive than reactive on modern classics, because that's when the big bills can come. So I will always push to go down that avenue, because I think there's character, there's personality, there's stories that can be had, and it doesn't have to be, and it's not always a complete horror show.
Well, I think it is a horror show, and I don't think you should set a budget. I think you have to, I agree with you, I think you have to buy the best car available. And you, after that, you've got to have moneyless deep pockets, mate.
No, bullcrap.
No, it's not bullcrap.
No, it is bullcrap, mate.
Because
it
things go wrong.
It's absolutely
all the time.
Crap. absolute bullcrap. My 360 across the 4 years I've owned it, on average, as a breakdown across every year, the yearly spend, £1,200.
Fine. But one, you were lucky with that car. Two,
I wasn't lucky. I did my research and I bought a good example.
You bought a good example. And to this point, you still get it very, very well looked after.
Yeah, I picked the right specialist.
But correct. But as well, you have spent a few quid on that car, and there were some big bills, mate. It's
an average of 1,200 quid. I had a good warranty, so I went in with a good warranty system, which looked after me on the big bill that I had. That was warranty. Yeah. And it's 1,200 quid a year on an average. And so therefore you can budget. I have people message me about 360s all the time, and I say, budget aside, expect to need to spend a couple of grand. Sometimes you're going to spend more, sometimes you're going to spend less. It will average out. Mm. And you can't sit there and say, oh, whenever you buy any modern classic, you've got to have endlessly deep pockets. It's going to cost... Of course there are horror stories. Absolutely, of course. But it is not every car.
There is another thing to your advantage as well, is because of your job. So that car and the way it's maintained and who you found, not always people have that luxury. No, you know, so you found the best car, you found one of the best blokes in the country, full stop, to maintain it.
I bought the car from the guy who maintains it.
Correct.
But that was not because of anything else. That's because the car was for sale and I got lucky.
Yeah, well, I don't think you got lucky because you was looking, but because of your social media as well, that would have helped you, essentially, because it's your job.
But it's not helping me on terms of those running costs, because I analyse my running costs. I analyse exactly it, because it's the, and it infuriates me when
how people, many miles you done
people
it?
Like you
people
since
like
I've
me.
Since I've owned it,
yeah,
18,000.
How long you've done 18,000 miles in that car? How many years you had it?
4 years.
5,000 a year, nearly.
Yeah.
All right, you have used it.
People like you.
Maybe you have been lucky, because I've also got some real horror stories.
I know,
as well,
but
by the
your remit, your mentality is at the worst end of the scale.
The end that I've seen.
Because you're getting pieces of crap at the dealerships as part X's that aren't looked after or whatever. You're looking at it from the disaster, which I totally get. And I know that can happen.
Which is what people buy as well, by the way.
Fine. And that's why I'm trying to give Ben this advice. Don't buy a car from Tony.
And I'll tell you another thing as well. Before you carry on, you give very, very good money for your car.
I've way too much for my car. But the point being, so I'm coming at it from the very positive end. You're coming at it from the very negative end. I'm trying to give Ben advice in the middle, which is be prepared that there are horror shows. Try and avoid them. Try and do your research. Pre-purchase inspections, read on forums, what goes wrong, what can be the expensive stuff when it goes wrong. V12 Vantage, for example. For Aston Martin Bristol, I was looking at a V12 Vantage, which looked super cheap online. I've told this story many times before, and some people get very upset, but 60 grand V12 Vantage, and it needed 23 grand worth of work, something like that, or 12 grand worth of
work. We spoke about this.
Yeah, we've spoken about it a lot, and there are Vantage fans out there who get very cross when I bring this story up. But what I'm trying to point out is you've got to do your research and work out where the bills might be, what you can afford to do,
and buy the best car.
Yeah, and find the best example that you can afford. And therefore, you can still end up with a fantastic car and F92 M3 with the V8. John Benson had one of those, and he absolutely adored it. And he didn't have huge problems.
If you get a good one, then you're all right. But it all depends when he bought it as well, because they're getting older and older now with more miles. And the bit I'm not really with you with is that buy the best car you can afford. Now...
You can't buy a car you can't afford.
No, because you bought one of the best examples from one of the best blokes who maintains it. There were cars out there with high miles that weren't that good that were 50,000 quid. So there might be a bloke, that's all the budget he's got.
Yes.
So he's going to buy a pile of poo.
No, but the thing is...
So don't buy that car.
No.
Spend 90 grand and buy the top one and then you're going to be all right.
No,
that's what you're saying.
No, I said that you can afford. My point being, and Paul Wallace, sorry to call you out on this, but I don't think he listens to the podcast or whatever.
He doesn't listen to anything.
It's not about going, it's not about spec chasing in the modern classic world. If you're sitting there and you're looking at a car, there's a 65 grand car, which is the top of your budget, and it's got immaculate service history. It's been serviced, it's been maintained perfectly. You're aware of all the bills. It's got all the paperwork. It's in fantastic condition. You're getting warranty with it. 65 grand right at the top. But there's a car at 57 grand, which you prefer the spec of. It's done a few more miles. It's missing some service history. You're like, oh, I'm going to go for that one because it's a bit more me. That's the mistake you're making.
I agree.
Don't try and save 5 grand. That's my advice. I'm not saying if you're getting the 65 grand car, but there's cars up at 80 that you're in the desert. Buy what you can afford is what I'm saying. You can't just write yourself off. But do your research, be proactive, and you can have an amazing, amazing time. It's not like you come on this podcast, Tony.
Well, I have to be here.
Week after week. Old cars are crowded, disaster.
You need in bottom, general.
Mate, I don't have bottomless pits of money and I own a 20-year-old Ferrari.
But you bought one of the best examples.
Yes, that's my advice.
What I'm saying is you could have bought a 50,000 quid one and you'd be sitting there crying.
People don't buy the 50 grand one.
But then people, what I'm trying to say to you is some people haven't got 80 odd grand to spend on a car. They've only got 50,000 quid and they want a 360. Then so they're going to buy a pile of poo and throw a load of money at it.
There are 50 grand examples. They're better than other 50 grand examples. There are 80,000 mile cars out there which still have great service history, that have been maintained well, that have all the stamps, that have been to Ferrari specialists, compared to, so you can have a 50 grand car with 80,000 miles which has got all of that, or a 49 grand car which has got 30,000 miles but no service
history. But I'm not talking about, but that's, so
there would, the best one you can afford,
correct, but you wouldn't buy, there wouldn't be a grand difference, there would be £30,000 difference as you experience, because you bought the best one.
996 40th anniversary, we're ending it here now because my blood, I'm going to punch you in the face. 996 40th anniversary.
How did that go?
I bought a car that was, in inverted commas, cheap. Okay?
Yeah.
So the top end of the market when I bought was probably a car for 35, 38. And that was through like Paragon Porsche or JZM. You know, it's a real proper...
And you got a proper car.
That's a proper, proper car.
Yeah.
Well, I went, oh no, this is a project. You know, it's kind of a bit of fun. So I found an independent sale guy selling off his driveway. He'd maintained it himself for 6 years. Had a couple of stamps from like 2012. I took it for a PPI and... Pre-purchase inspection. Yeah.
PDI.
Thank you. What's the
pre-delivery inspection.
Oh, what? No, but PPI makes the same thing, isn't
PPI
it?
Is the claims insurance.
Right, PDI. Took it for PDI. They identified probably a couple of grand's worth of work.
Right.
I drove the car away 23 grand later.
Yeah.
In terms of work. Now, if I to hadn't you. Been such a cheapskate...
23 grand to you. By
yeah,
the
yeah,
way, as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To a normal punter, it's more.
No.
It would have been.
No,
come on.
Well, Tony, thanks for just... I didn't pay the 23 grand.
Right.
So it was 23 grand to a punter.
Right.
A little bit less to me.
And maybe more.
No. 23 grand to a punter, a little less to me.
So what did you pay for the car?
27.
Right. And a half. So you're worse off by buying the
car. No, but hold on a second.
Keep going.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I was the cheapskate. I could have afforded 35.
Yeah.
I went 27.
Yeah.
I ended up with a disaster.
Yeah, which is what I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
Because the man that's got 25 or 27 grand ain't got 40 for a good one. It's all, but and you're saying buy the car you can afford in budget.
No, you
can't do both. It's one or the other.
But
another fact as well.
I didn't look for the best car at 27 grand. I looked for a cheaper car than 35.
Right.
And if I was at 27, I'd be looking at the best one.
Right. But you weren't at 26, but then you wouldn't have bought one of them anniversaries then. You'd have bought something else completely different because you couldn't buy an anniversary.
You could.
Not a nice one because you bought a shit one.
No, but there were nicer examples than the one that I got.
Why didn't you buy one of them then?
Because I was in a rush.
Well, that's your own fault.
I agreed.
But how do you know there were nicer examples? Because you never got inspected. They could have had 40 grand worth of damage.
Fair.
So I don't really understand what you're saying to me. And by the way, just to, you can go blank after this if you like. Sign off. Where's the 996 now?
I sold it.
Well done. So you didn't like it that much?
No.
So what a complete waste of time that was.
I agree.
So buy a classic car, spend a load of money on it, and then let someone else enjoy it. Well done.
No, fair. But that was a business. That was my disaster of buying cars for content.
We can't use that as an example then. You should have stuck to your 360 as an example, because that was a really good example. You completely balls this up. I'll leave it to the builder. It's because you keep the builders distracting you. I'll blame it on the builder.
So Ben, I suggest you go and buy yourself.
But buy the best one for the best money that you can, which is what Sam's trying to say. If you've only got a 15 grand budget, don't buy one. If they're 30 grand, a nice one's 30 grand, you've got a 15 grand budget, find something else. Go and buy a push bike or something.
Okay, maybe I agree with that statement. If you want to follow Tony in his outrageous but probably correct opinions on the world, you can find him at Tony Crawford Car Sales. You can find me at Seen Through Glass. And unfortunately, we'll be back with you for another episode next week. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.